topic is the issue of mitzvah haba ba'avera, and we're going to start with sukkos-related sources, but expand from there. In particular, what I'd like to do is develop three different approaches to mitzvah haba ba'avera, none of which are we actually going to accept, but all of them have something to teach us. It begins with the issue of the stolen lulav, source Aleph. The Mishnah in Sukkah, it says, lulav ha-gazav ha-yavish posel, a lulav that is stolen is no good, as well as also a lulav that is dried out. That's its own discussion. But the Gemara comments on this issue of disqualifying a stolen lulav, and it distinguishes between the first day of Yom Tov and other days of Yom Tov. Bishlam Yom Tov Rishon, the Gemara says there, I understand that on the first day of Yom Tov, we won't accept a stolen lulav. Tichsiv lachem, because the Torah says it shall be yours, Mishalachem, so it has to be your own, can't be from somebody else. Ela b'yom tov sheni amaylo, but why on the rest of Yom Tov, when it says the second day of Yom Tov, it doesn't just mean the second day of Yom Tov, but the rest of Yom Tov, why can't I use a stolen lulav? So Amar b'yochna, mishum ar b'shem ben yochai, mishum dehavale mitzvah haba'a ba'aveira. The answer is, it is a mitzvah that comes to me as the result of a transgression, out of the result of the fact that I stole it. Shnei Amar, he quotes a pasuk in Malachi regarding korbanos, v'haveisim gazul v'shapisech v'shacholei, you bring a stolen animal as a korban, a lame animal as a korban, a sick animal as a korban. These aren't things that Hashem wants as his korbanos. So we linked the stolen animal and the lame animal and the sick animal. The Gemara plays on the first two. Gazul, dumya d'pisayach, the stolen animal, is like the one that is lame in the sense that ma pisayach lesle takanta, just like the lame animal, we're talking about an animal with a blemish which will not be repaired, which will not be fixed. Avgozel lesle takanta, so to the stolen animal cannot be, so to speak, repaired, rehabilitated. You can't ever use that stolen animal. Loshna lefne yeyush, loshna la'acher yeyush, whether before the owner gives up hope, or whether after the owner gives up hope, it doesn't make a difference. You can never bring the stolen animal as a carbon. So Gemara asks, well, why not? Bishlama lefne yeyush. I understand you can't bring a carbon that was stolen if the owner has not given up hope on it after all. Dechsev adam ki yakriv mikem. Amar Rachmana, the Torah says, you have to bring of your own. V'lav hidehu, it ain't yours. Ela la'achar yeyush, hakanye b'yeyush. But after yeyush, now it's yours. Why can't I bring it as a carbon? The answer is because it is a mitzvah that comes to you through an iser, through a transgression. So we learn that you cannot bring a stolen lulav, a stolen animal as a karban, and I cannot use a stolen lulav for a mitzvah. That's the core point. Okay. So far, so good. We find examples of this elsewhere, such as the Gemara in Bava Kamma, it's also in Sanhedrin, regarding separating challah from dough that was made from stolen materials, and the question of making a bracha when you separate the challah. Tosfos in Sukkah, Daf Tesa Med Aleph, suggests that this principle that you can't do a mitzvah with something that's a product of an avera, is actually a din derabanan, perhaps. Okay. Two questions, though, regarding this concept. One question comes from Source Beis. Source Beis talks about a lulav from an asherah, the asherah, the tree that was worshipped for Avodah Zarah, v'shel irani dachas, v'shel asherah pasul. You can't use a lulav that comes from an irani dachas, a city that is condemned for destruction because of idolatry. You can't use a lulav from an asherah, a tree that was worshipped. So the Gemara asks, "V'ha'ama Rava lulav shel Avodah Zarah lo yitol v'imnata kasher?" What do you mean I can't use such a lulav? Rava says you're not supposed to use a lulav of idolatry, but if you used it, it's kosher. So what do you mean I can't use it? So the Gemara says there are two different kinds of asherah, two different kinds of avodah zarah. Hachav asherah de Moshe askinan de katutei mechsach shiurei. When we say that a lulav from an asherah is pasul, it's talking about a lulav from an asherah that existed when the Jews came into Israel under Moshe. The Jews enter the land of Canaan, and they are told they have to destroy the asheros. So since you have to destroy the asherah, therefore this lulav is as though halachically it doesn't exist, and therefore it is too small. The lulav that you use has to be a certain size. This lulav is too small, because it's non-existent. Non-existent counts as too small. So that's why that lulav is pasul. Which leaves me with a question. Why did the Gemara need to say that the lulav is pasul because, well, it's too small, since it doesn't exist, since you have to get rid of it? Why not simply say, mitzvah haba b'avera? It's an avera product. That's one question. Question number two comes from Source Gimel. The hadas, the myrtle branch, as it grows, has berries on it. We call them anavim, like the same term that we use for grapes. The rule is that your hadas must have more leaves than it has grapes. if the grapes are more prominent than the leaves, you have to remove the grapes in order to be able to use the hadas. That's a basic rule. So what happens if Yom Tov comes and I recognize that the hadas has too many berries on it? What can I do? The answer is nothing. Why? Because if you take the berries off of the hadas, thereby making the hadas usable, you are guilty of metakin. You are repairing it. You are fixing it. You are taking something that was not usable and making it usable. So the Gemara in Sukkah says, source Gimel, Hayu anavav merubos me'alav, if it has more grapes than it has leaves, puzzle, no good. Vimiatan, but if you reduced the number of berries not on Yom Tov yet, just generally, you reduce the number of berries, kosher, vimiatan v'yom tov, but you're not allowed to reduce the number of berries on Yom Tov. Not allowed to reduce the number of berries on Yom Tov. The Rambam quotes this as halakha, but he says that if you reduce the number of berries on the hadas on Yom Tov, it's kosher. You're not supposed to do it. Doing it is a bad thing. However, if you did it, the hadas is kosher. So now I have a question. What happened to mitzvah haba'a ba'avera? Right? I achieved the mitzvah through an avera. So, again, source number one, source Aleph told me that I can't use the lulav that was stolen, even if it's now mine. The owner gave up hope and all of that. Nonetheless, I can't use it because that's mitzvah haba'a ba'avera. However, we did not use the principle of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera to disqualify the lulav of an asherah. We did not use the principle of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera to disqualify the hadas from which the berries were removed on Yom Tov. So we're going to try three different approaches to explain where we apply or do not apply the principle of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera. The first approach is the ends don't justify the means. That mitzvah haba'a ba'avera disqualifies an item only if the avera actually enables the mitzvah. If it's an item that was used with an avera, that doesn't necessarily mean I can't use it for a mitzvah. It's only if the mitzvah was actually enabled by the avera. Ends don't justify the means. You can't break Shabbos in order to get money that you're going to use to give to tzedakah. Ends don't justify the means. So Tosfos in Sukkah promotes this idea. Take a look at source Dalet. Mishum dahavale mitzvah haba ba'avera. Tosfos asks, V'im tomar, you might ask, L'kamon de paslina lolov shal asherah v'shal ir hanidachas mishum demichsas shiureh. He asks our question. The question that we asked regarding source Beis. When the Gemara disqualifies the lulav from an asherah, because after all, michsas shiureh, it's too small, typically, mishum mitzvah haba ba'avera. Why didn't we disqualify it instead? Because of mitzvah haba ba'avera. V'su, and further, amai sharin into lab asherah de Moshe. What about an asherah that was not Moshe's asherah, that was not from the time of Moshe? Why is it that you would be willing to accept it? The Gemara sounded like we would be willing. V'yesh lo amai delo dami legezel. He says, you could answer that that's not like the case of the stolen lulav. In the case of a stolen lulav, without your avera, you wouldn't be able to do the mitzvah. You wouldn't have a lulav. That's why it's disqualified. The mitzvah is contingent upon the avera. Avalhani, whereas these cases, you have a lulav that grew on an asherah, it isn't because of the avera that you're able to use it for the mitzvah. The avera is not relevant to the mitzvah. At one stage in its life cycle, somebody worshipped it. At a later stage in its life cycle, you want to use it for a mitzvah. The two do not connect to each other. There are a couple of interesting applications of this idea. One is regarding stolen matzah. The Yerushalmi in Shabbos discusses the case in which one shechts a karban chatas on Shabbos. The Yerushalmi there says that if you shecht a karban chatas on Shabbos, your shechita is kosher. Because you're not shechting it for yourself. You're only shechting it because the Torah obligates you to bring a karban chatas. That's not called litzorech. That's not called doing a malacha for your own sake. It's not my sake. I'm shechting the chatas because Hashem wants to have a karban. Therefore, the shechita is actually valid. Mind you, you will have to now atone for having shechted an animal on Shabbos. But that's a separate point. Kriya, if someone suffers a loss of a relative and he tears his clothing, so kriya is something one does for himself. The cathartic element to it, the satisfaction he gains by tearing his clothing, means that he's doing it for himself, and therefore you do not succeed in fulfilling the mitzvah. That's a mitzvah haba'a ba'avera, the kriya that one does. So the Gemara there then asks, when I use matzah, I only use matzah for the sake of fulfilling the Torah's obligation. I don't use matzah because I enjoy it. I use matzah in order to fulfill the biblical obligation. So take a look at source A. Chavraya bone kam kume Rabbi Yosi. They asked in front of Rabbi Yosi. They asked the following question: Lochein am Rabbi Yochanan bishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadok matzah gezula eno yotze ba yedechal vasal pesach. We learned you cannot fulfill your obligation with stolen matzah on Pesach. Why not? I'm not doing it for myself. I'm doing it for the mitzvah. Therefore, so Amar Lun, to which he replied, Taman gufa avera. There, the matzah itself is a product of avera, as opposed to, let's say, the tearing case, the tearing kriya, ramacha hu avar avera. That's a different story. The matzah itself there is an entity of avera. So the Chasam Sofer explains that Yerushalmi means that eating the matzah eliminated the possibility of ever returning the stolen object, and therefore it's dependent upon the avera. There's more to say about this Yerushalmi. The Chidah points out the Pnei Moshe takes that differently. The Pnei Moshe doesn't see that Gemara as the Chasam Sofer does. Nonetheless, the Chasam Sofer sees within the disqualification of stolen matzah, he sees support for the idea that if a mitzvah is enabled by an avera, it is no good. A second application, the issue of fulfilling Pur Revu with a mamzer. This is a longer discussion, but basically, if you take a look in source Vav, you see the Mishnah first that's brought in Yevamos. Mishi Yeshlo Ben Mikol Makom, one who has a child of any prominence, however that child came into existence. Poder Eishes Aviv Min HaYibum. In that case, the mother does not have to do Yibum ever, because there is a child. V'chayev Al-Makasov Al-Kilolaso. That child is liable if he hits the parent, if he curses the parent. Ubno L'chol Davar. He is one's child for all purposes. Chutz Mimi Sheyesh L'Ben Min HaShifcha U'min HaOvedes Kochavim, unless it's the child through a Shifcha, through someone who isn't Jewish. That's the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, Mikol Makom, when you say any child, Lasuye Mai, what exactly did you mean to include? What would I have thought doesn't count as your child and in fact does? So Rav Yehuda Lasuye Mamzer. Rav Yehuda says it comes to include a Mamzer. To teach me that the Mamzer is considered to be one's child. So the Mishnah says, your child is your child is your child for all sorts of halachic purposes, and the Bavli says, that means even a mamzer is your child. Now the Yerushalmi, commenting on that Mishnah, does not make the point that any child includes mamzer. The Yerushalmi doesn't actually say that. But the Yerushalmi does say that when we say your child is your child is your child, that includes Pur Revu. It's in source Zion, Rabbi Avin Boi, Ubno L'chol Davar, Afilu L'Piri of Arivya, V'lo Shanye. He says the way that we read the Yerushalmi, his statement is that your child is your child even for Pru Uruvu. He asks the question, is it even for Pru Uruvu? And the answer is yes, that's no different. So the Bavli says, your child is your child is your child includes a mamzer. And the Yerushalmi says, the rule of your child is your child is your child extends to Pru Uruvu. That would seem to indicate, putting everything together, that you can fulfill Pur Revu by having a child in a prohibited way, by having a child who is in fact a mamzer. And that's what the Ramah rules. Take a look at Ches. The Ramah writes, Haya haben mamzer o cheresh shote v'katan, if one has a child who is a mamzer as well as someone in these other categories, kiyem a mitzvah, he still fulfilled Pur Revu. That's a remarkable idea. What happened to mitzvah haba'a ba'avera? Isn't that the ultimate case of mitzvah haba'a ba'avera? In fact, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush don't mention this Yerushalmi that includes Mamzer. It could be they disagree with this idea that you can fulfill Pur Revu with a Mamzer. But the Menachas Chinuch says, no, this actually makes perfect sense. This actually works. Why? Because we don't say your mitzvah enabled. I'm sorry, we don't say your Avera enabled the mitzvah. Even though it's true that without the Avera you don't have the child, nonetheless, remember that the view of the Menachas Chinuch and others is that one does not fulfill Pur Revu when the child is born. The parent fulfills Pur Revu when the child survives the parent. If, Rahmanul Islam, there's a case in which the children do not outlive the parent, then the parent did not fulfill Pur Revu. The Aruch Laner makes this point. It's in source Tess. He says, "Va'afilu lahanoch shitos to chashiv ze mitzvah haba ba'avera." Even according to the view that this should be mitzvah haba ba'avera, gam ken yishlomar, we could still say, "Da'afilu lo kiyem a mitzvahs asay depru revu b'sha'as bia." Even though he didn't fulfill the mitzvah pur revu at the time that he did the act with this woman, because it was a prohibited act, mikom akom yatzei de pur revu beben mamzer, nonetheless he still fulfills pur revu with a child who is a mamzer, kevet de miyuchas acharav, since ultimately he has a child who is identified as his child. And he connects us to the Gemara later on in Yevamos Samach Beis, someone who isn't Jewish, who has children and then converts to Judaism. At the time that he had the children, the time when the children were produced, he wasn't Jewish. It wasn't an act of Pur Revu. Nonetheless, guess what? Now he has fulfilled Pur Revu. The point for us is simply that the concept of mitzvah haba ba'avera, as if an avera enables a mitzvah, then the mitzvah is no good, is one that that we find as a current idea in terms of the disqualification of stolen matzah, and also in terms of the discussion about fulfilling Pur Revu with a mamzer. The fact that the Aruch Laner needs to give me this idea to explain how it is that I fulfilled Pur Revu with a mamzer tells me that we have this concept as a current idea that if the avera enables the mitzvah, ordinarily one cannot say that he fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, there are some challenges to this idea. For example, Shar HaMelech asks, let's go back to one of the initial cases we mentioned. We started out with three initial cases. One was the stolen lulav, the second one was the lulav from the Asherah, and the third is the lulav with the berries. So, looking at the lulav with the Asherah, first, the lulav from the Asherah, now I understand why that's actually going to be a kosher lulav, right? Aside from Asherah de Moshe, the one that is smaller than the shear. That one we know why is no good. But we understand why the lulav from the Asherah is going to be acceptable, because the Avera is not what enabled the mitzvah. Right? The Avera is not what enabled the mitzvah. That's fine. That's what Tosfos said. But what about the one with the berries? If I remove the berries on Yom Tov, so then my Avera did enable the mitzvah, no? My Avera clearly enabled the mitzvah. So the Shar HaMelech, writing in the 19th century on the Rambam, says, if you believe that the definition of mitzvah ba Avera is where your Avera enables your mitzvah is no good, then in the case of the Hadas that had the berries removed on Yom Tov, the Hadas should be no good. So I have a challenge. In fact, the philosophical statement of ends don't justify the means is not that clear-cut either. There are times when we say that the ends do justify the means, such as in violating a derabbanan sometimes in order to uphold a deoraisa. The Gemara in Beitza is filled with such cases where you violate a derabbanan for the sake of the deoraisa of Simchas Yom Tov. So we do have cases where the ends do justify the means. It's a question of evaluating which one carries greater weight. So that's not such a simple principle. So we offer a second explanation for why you can't have an avera enable a mitzvah, why mitzvah haba ba'avera is no good. And that is where the mitzvah act is commission of the avera, where doing the mitzvah involves violating the avera. And this is the principle that we call elsewhere the double effect. The idea of the double effect is the following. I have an action I could take, and I should take, in order to fulfill a mitzvah. However, I know that it's also going to cause a negative result. It could cause an avera. So the question, or not could, it will cause an avera. So the question is, do I engage in this action knowing full well that it's also going to violate an avera? That's my question. It comes up in medicine. The patient, I'm taking care of a patient. The patient is in great pain. The patient is dying. I want to give the patient morphine in order to reduce the patient's pain. But I know that morphine is also going to depress the breathing of the patient. It's going to make it harder for the patient to breathe. So I am doing something good. I am reducing the pain level, but I am also effectively killing the patient. This is a very complicated issue. So according to the Shaar HaMelech, that's the idea of mitzvah ba'avera. Where an avera enables a mitzvah, I might still be able to do it and benefit and use the mitzvah. However, if the two are going to be simultaneous, the same action is going to generate both mitzvah and avera, then we say your mitzvah is puzzle. And he proposes that to solve the problem of the hadas that had the berries removed on Yom Tov. He says the reason why you could still use the hadas is because you removed the berries first, and then afterwards you use the hadas. The mitzvah and the avera do not occur simultaneously. That's the explanation that the Shaar HaMelech offers. It also helps explain why a stolen lulav is no good, because at the time that you use the stolen lulav, you are violating Beheshivas Hagzela to return the stolen item. It also explains why stolen matzah is no good. Right? Because again, eating it certainly violates Veshivas Hagzela. You will not be able to return the matzah anymore. Similarly, if you have matzah that's made from tevel or demai, untithe produce, so eating tevel, eating demai is prohibited. Therefore, I can't use the matzah. The avera and the mitzvah will occur simultaneously. The Mordechai talks about ravos that a non-Jew picked for a Jew on Shabbos. I can't use them. I can use them. Why? Because the avera did not occur during the mitzvah performance. He did the avera, and then I'm going to use them. So that's a second idea, this idea of the Shaar HaMelech. The problem, and when we go back to our three initial cases, it fits all of them. It fits the stolen lulav case. It fits the Asherah case also. The lulav from the Asherah is kosher, except in that one case, the Asherah, the Moshe, because it has to be destroyed, because the worship of the Asherah occurred long before my mitzvah. And it explains why the deep-buried hadas, the hadas that had the berries removed, is kosher as well. However, Tosfos in Sukkah asks why we disqualify an Asherah lulav, right, at least Asherah de Moshe, on the basis of Ketute Michsas Shiure, saying that, well, it's too small, instead of saying Mitzvah Haba Ba'avera. Tos actually asks that question. And his answer is that, well, the Avera doesn't lead to the Mitzvah, and so Mitzvah Haba Ba'avera is not an issue. That's his answer. That's why it's okay. But if our answer is the valid answer, if this is the answer, the Shaar HaMelech is actually real, then he shouldn't have said it's because mitzvah ba'avera isn't relevant because the avera didn't enable the mitzvah. He should have said it's because the avera doesn't take place during the mitzvah. It seems that Tosfos there is not accepting this idea. Also, the Beis Moed writes that if matzah is transported from a private area to a public area, you can't use that matzah for the mitzvah. Why? Because of mitzvah ba'avera. The Pri Chadash, writing in Aruch Chaim Tafnu and Dalid, Sivkat and Dalid, rejects the Beis Moed's argument, because he says there, in the case of the matzah transported from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, the avera does not generate the mitzvah. That's his answer. Instead of saying that it's because the avera doesn't take place during the mitzvah. So, both Tosfos and the Pri Chadash don't seem to be working with this idea of the Shaar HaMelech. The Shaar HaMelech has a problem, because his idea really should have been used by them. So that's a weakness in his argument. In fact, also, the philosophical issue is not that clear-cut either, because there are cases in which we say double effect is acceptable. Because your intent is for the good, we ignore the fact that it's also going to cause a prohibited result. Worth noting. Okay, so we've had two approaches to explain mitzvah ba'avera. One, ends don't justify the means, and two, double effect. Here's a third and last approach. And the third and last approach is somewhat radical, and it comes from a sefer called the Yalkut Gershuni, written in Transylvania in the 19th century, quote by Rav Gershon Stern, and cited in the Stechemet. The third approach says that ends don't justify the means, the way we started out saying. So we go back to our initial concept that where the Avera enables the mitzvah, then we won't use it. However, we will use the item for a mitzvah if we can satisfy the ta'am ha-mitzvah, the explanation for the mitzvah. My default assumption is that the mitzvah cannot be fulfilled via an avera, but there are some cases in which the Torah actually spells out the goal of the mitzvah. And if the goal of the mitzvah is not hampered by your avera, then good, you're able to... if the goal of the mitzvah is not hampered by the avera that you are performing, then we say that that in fact the mitzvah is fulfilled even though it was enabled by an avera. That's the third approach. Take a look, please, on your sheet at Source Yud Beis. He says, "Lo shayach mitzvah haba ba'avera el b'mitzvah shelo nemar tam ha-mitzvah v'tachlis hayotze mimenu u'le'eze kavon atziv Hashem yizbarach kein." He says, "Mitzvah haba ba'avera only applies regarding a mitzvah for which the reason for the mitzvah was not stated, and the goal, the intent, was never stated. Rak she'tzarech la'aseh ritzono bo yizbarach. You're just trying to do what Hashem told you to do." Even though it's true that for many, many, many mitzvos, the Rabbanan did look and find reasons and lessons for the mitzvah, we don't pretend that those are reading Hashem's mind. Only where Hashem actually says, this is the benefit of the mitzvah, do we actually apply the tam ha-mitzvah. So he continues to say, "Aval, however, the period of Arivya, sha'amra tar beferush, the tam ha-mitzvah mishulam lo so bara la sheves yitzara," regarding Puruvu, where the Torah says explicitly that the reason is Hashem wants the world to be populated, so that the human race will survive, and the world will not be destroyed. So in that case, I don't care that he did an avera when he procreated. He fulfilled the goal. The Torah said procreate in order to fill the world. So the Alkut Gershuni says, ordinarily the ends do not justify the means. However, if we know the goal, if we know what it is that we're trying to accomplish, then indeed the ends may well justify the means. And we have some applications for this idea beyond the Puruvu case. The Sukkah Gezula, the Sukkah that was stolen. So the Gemara needs a special pasuk of Lecha to disqualify a stolen Sukkah. It doesn't simply say Mitzvah Haba Ba'Avera, and therefore it's pasul. Why? Didn't the Avera enable the Mitzvah? True. However, the Torah says L'man Yedu Doroseichem, that the purpose of sitting in the Sukkah is L'man Yedu Doroseichem Kibasukkah Soshabdi as Bnei Yisrael, so that your generations will recognize that I put the Jews in Sukkos in the Midbar. That's the goal of the Mitzvah of Sukkah. So I can fulfill that even with a stolen Sukkah. I can still fulfill L'man Yedu Doroseichem. So therefore I needed a separate pasuk to disqualify it. Mitzvah Baba Vera was not sufficient. Eating chametz on Erev Pesach after the Isser begins. The rule is, you're not allowed to eat chametz on Erev Pesach after midday. You have to be rid of all of your chametz. However, let's say there was a roll left and I found it after midday and I ate it in order to get rid of it. The Baal Amor says, I fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbisu of getting rid of chametz because the Torah's goal is to eradicate chametz, and I did it. I was successful. Mitzvah haba ba'avera, but I fulfilled the mitzvah. Those are the ideas that are brought in the Yalkut Gershuni and in the Stechemed. I would apply this even further to the Arba Minim. The Torah says that we are to take the Minim. Take a look in Source Yud Gimel. L'man Yedu Doroseichem. That's from before. Source Yud Dalet. U'kachtem lachem bayom arishon. You shall take for yourselves on the first day. Pre Eitz Hadar. Kapos Tamrim Vanaf Eitz Avos V'Arbe Nachal. The four species. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yamim, and you shall be joyous before Hashem your God for 7 days. So the truth of the matter is that the mitzvah of the Dalet Minim is really the first day. But there's this idea of being joyous before Hashem. So maybe taking this idea of the Yalkut HaGershuni, the lulav of the Asherah is no good, because the lulav, we had other discussions regarding the... Yeah, I'm going to hold off on applying this one. I'm not sure that I like this idea, come to think of it. I see holes in it. All right, leave that be. But the Stechemet, in any case, rejects this idea from Rav Gershon Stern, from the Yalkut HaGershuni. He says this does not work. Why? Take a look at his answer in Tezvav. He says, Omer ani, I say, dimidivrayim yeshlanu stira le'ikar teirat hamafarshim hanal. He says, because this contradicts everything that everyone's brought all along in the discussion about mitzvah b'avera. We had real problems. What to do with the lulav of the Asherah. We had real problems of what to do with the lulav that was deburied on Yom Tov. We asked real questions, and no one ever brought this idea before. It doesn't appear correct to me to start throwing out new distinctions, and it works here and it doesn't work there. When this isn't at all what appears in the Rishonim, and in fact it's the opposite of what appears in the Rishonim. Uma gam shenira sheyesh stira lechiluk zeh midin matza gizula ledasa sovrim da pisa lumishu mitzvah babavera. Further, what are you going to do with the case of stolen matzah, where the Torah gives you a reason why you eat matzah? Right? The Torah says you eat matzah as part of reliving Yitzias Mitzrayim, teaching it to your kids, and yet I can't use matzah gezula, even though that doesn't keep me from teaching my kids about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So the argument doesn't work regarding stolen matzah. And, in fact, the philosophical theme is not so clear either, because if you're going to tell me that ends don't justify other means normally, except where they allow me to fulfill the reason of the mitzvah, I'm treading on thin ice in terms of this idea as a philosophical concept, this idea of practicing based on Tamei HaMitzvos. Shlomo HaMelech gets in trouble for practicing based on Tamei HaMitzvos. So, in terms of the issue of Lo Yarbe Lo Nashim, and he gets into a little bit of hot water in that regard. This is a very dangerous game. So again, just to sum up, we started out by explaining the principle of Mitzvah Ba'avera as it applies to the stolen lulav. And we asked, why doesn't it apply to the lulav of an Asherah post-Moshe to disqualify it? And why doesn't it apply to disqualify the Hadas if the berries were removed from the Hadas on Yom Tov? We offered one approach that says that the ends don't justify the means. That's the idea of mitzvah ba'avera, where the avera enables the mitzvah. However, in the Asherah case, the Avera did not enable the mitzvah, like in Purva with the Mamzer, that the Avera with the generating the Mamzer was not actually what created the fulfillment of Purva. On the other hand, we were stuck regarding the Hadas that was deburied on Yom Tov. For the Hadas that was deburied on Yom Tov, it appears that this does not work. Also, the philosophical idea is not that clear-cut, because there are times within Halacha when the ends do justify the means. Even where the means are inappropriate, as long as the ends are of a greater value. Our second approach is that mitzvah ba'avera disqualifies only where the mitzvah act takes place with commission of the Avera. The two happen side by side simultaneously. And this is the idea of a double effect, the same action having a mitzvah effect and an Avera effect. And this works to explain the case of the Hadas that was deburied on Yom Tov. Since the Avera occurred before the mitzvah, the Hadas is still acceptable. It'll also work for the Asherah case. In the case of the Asherah, the Avera with the Asherah happened before you wanted to use this for the mitzvah. And therefore, it'll work to explain that as well. And it works fine with the stolen lulav as well, because using the stolen lulav violates Vayishivas Hagzeil Asher Gazal, the obligation to return it. So, in that sense, it works. The main problem with this idea of the Shara Melech is simply that it doesn't seem to be what Tosfos worked with in his discussion about the lulav of the Asherah, and it isn't what the Pri Chadash worked with when he discussed matzah taken from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim before it is eaten. And then the third approach is the approach that the default is ends do not justify the means, except where we know what Hashem wants to accomplish with this mitzvah, and even with my Avera I still fulfill the mitzvah. That's his concept. And he applies it, let's say, to the case of a stolen sukkah. You could fulfill sukkah even with a stolen sukkah, if not for a special pasuk. On the other hand, I can't fulfill lulav with a stolen lulav. The difference is that regarding sukkah, the Torah tells me explicitly what we're trying to accomplish. L'man yedu dorasechem, regarding lulav, it doesn't do so. The challenge to this idea from this Dechemet is that it doesn't work for the case of stolen matzah. And in general, it seems to be just a nice, very interesting approach, but it's made up and doesn't seem to be what the Rishonim worked with at all.